Dear devotees, we'll be continuing with this series of explanations of the Bhakti Shatak, which, as I previously explained, is a writing of Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj, a very concise and very important writing of his, 100 dohas, written in Hindi, that explains the main philosophy of Hinduism and the path to God, and specifically bhakti. And along with explaining, it reconciles in, you can say, very elegantly reconciles all the apparent contradictions that we find in scriptures or the teachings of previous saints. I say apparent contradictions because in a divine philosophy like Sanatan Dharma, there can't be actual contradictions. In something like Vedas, which is produced by Sri Krishna himself, it's an eternal power of knowledge of Sri Krishna, how can there be actual contradictions? That would require there to be mistakes. And then how could we have faith in Vedas? If there was even one mistake in Ved, then how would you know which things were true and which was the mistake? How could you have faith in any of it? Kripaluji Maharaj gives the example sometimes that a person tells you, I'm very truthful. I always tell the truth, except in my life, in my whole life, I've taken nishchay. I'm going to tell the truth all the time except for once. I'm going to tell one lie in my life. So how do you know this isn't the time he's telling the lie? If he's going to tell a lie even once, you can't trust him ever. So it's the same thing. We're treating Vedas especially and the other corroborating scriptures like Gita, Brahma Sutra, Puranas, Ramayana. We're treating these as authoritative sources to understand about things that are beyond our reach of our senses and our mind. In other words, God, soul. So we have no way right now of verifying what's in Vedas. To verify it, we have to become God-realized. We have to follow the path shown in Vedas. So it means we have to have faith in what's in Ved. If we don't, if we think there's even one mistake in Vedas, even one mistake in Gita, then any single statement we read in Vedas or Gita, we could call into doubt any of those. Because how do we know it could be the one mistake? Then we don't have faith in any of it. So if we're accepting it as an authoritative source, if we accept the sayings and writings of the saints as authoritative sources, we have to accept all of it. It's an all or nothing thing. There's no in between. Like some of it must be right and maybe some of it's wrong. Then none of it, we couldn't have faith in any of it. So what I'm saying is, when we see the writings, these great scriptures and the teachings of these saints, and we see contradictions, that can create doubt in our mind. So Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, in this Bhakti Shatak especially, and in all of his teachings, writings, speeches, he reconciled these apparent contradictions. He showed us how all these apparently contradictory statements of Vedas or Gita are actually all true if you have the proper context, if you understand the big picture. And same thing with the great saints. Even Shankaracharya, whose teachings appear to contradict other teachings of great saints like Chaitanya Mahaprabhuji or Jagadguru Ramanujacharya. There are apparent contradictions, but even that was reconciled by our Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. So we've been covering this in this Bhakti Shatak. We've been seeing how in relation to the forms of God, He gave us a nice, reconciled understanding of how all the forms are one and how they're interrelated. Same thing with the path to God. Bhakti, Gyan, Karma. So we've been understanding all of this. Most recently, in the most recent dohas that we looked at, we understood about Brahma, Paramatma, and Bhagwan. That one single Supreme God has these three main styles of presenting himself. And it depends upon his powers. If all of his powers are fully revealed, we call him Bhagwan. In that form, he is Shri Krishna. If his powers are partially revealed, mainly the power of prema bhakti or prema shakti, if that is concealed and only his almightiness and knowledge are revealed, then we call him Paramatma, Almighty God, Vishnu. And if all of his powers or almost all of his powers are dormant, we call him Brahm, formless God. Just like water has three states in which it exists, liquid, we call water, solid, we call ice or snow, and vapor, we call steam or water vapor. But all three are internally H2O. From one perspective, it appears that they're different, three different things. But the one with correct scientific knowledge knows that no, internally they're all one and the same. So Sri Kripaluji Maharaj has explained, according to the Bhagavatam, according to the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, that it may appear contradictory to us that why does God have all of these forms? He says he doesn't have all of these forms, he's one and the same. But because he has unlimited divine powers, and the powers are either revealed or concealed, therefore he can appear or represent himself in these various forms. But internally they're all one and the same. Although they can be experienced differently, and you could say in the analogy with the water, their use is different. If you need water and someone brings you ice, then he wants to argue with you that, well, it's H2O. You asked for water, this is H2O. You say, but I need the liquid form of water, not the solid form of water. Similarly, Sri Krishna is one with Vishnu, Shiva, Durga. But if you want a loving Leela, if you want him to sit in your lap as your son, if you want him to do Ras with you, then you need him in his form as Shri Krishna. It won't do to have him in his almighty form, and certainly not as formless. So they're all internally one and the same, yet their use or the way we can experience him in those various forms, it differs. So we see how the whole theory is reconciled into one elegant explanation. Now today we can continue with Doha number 25. In Doha number 25, Sri Kripaluji Maharaj explains that just like we have these three, Brahm, Paramatma, Bhagwan, formless God, Almighty God, and the loving form of God, the paths of Yog, Gyan, and Bhakti also relate to these three. So he says, Brahma prapti path gyan hai. The path of gyan leads to the attainment of Brahm, formless God. Paramatma path yog. Yog leads to the attainment of Almighty God, Paramatma. Krishna prapti path bhakti hai. And bhakti leads to the attainment of Bhagwan, Shri Krishna, in his loving form. Adhikari sabalog. In terms of the path of bhakti, everyone is adhikari. It means that everybody is qualified to practice bhakti. Whereas Gyan and Yog, well, the same cannot be said for them. I'll explain how this is, the detail of how this is true, after we chant this first Doha. Jai Radhe Krishna, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Krishna, Radhe. 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 Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe, Jai. Krishna. Jaya Krishna, Jaya Krishna, Brahma Prapipatha Gyan Hai Paramatma Patha Yoga Radhe Radhe. Brahma Praptipatha Gyan Hai Paramatma Patha Yoga Radhe Radhe. Path Gyan Krishna Prapti पथ भक्ति है अधिकारी सब लोग राधे राधे प्राप्ति
Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna Radhe. 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 Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna Radhe.
Understanding the qualification for a path is important before you try to follow that path. Like if you want to take, you want to learn something and you think maybe I'll enroll in the local university and take this class on computer programming. And you don't find out about the qualifications to enter that class. You walk into the class and the instructor tells you to turn your computer on and you say, where's the on-off button? Then the professor will say to you, you know, I think there's some other classes you need to take first before you try to learn computer programming. You have to be qualified for that thing. You have to lead up. And if you're qualified, then you can successfully learn about that thing or follow that practice. The path of jnana and yoga both have very demanding qualifications for someone to even begin the path. But the path of bhakti is for everybody. In the Bhagavatam it says, Nirvinnanam Jnana Yoga. Whereas it says, Na Nirvinno Nati Sakto Bhakti Yogasya Siddhida. Whereas the path of Jnana demands total renunciation, not only physical but mental. The path of Bhakti is for anyone, no matter what level of renunciation they're at. Why is it so? Why can someone practice devotion no matter what their inner state is, whereas the one who wants to follow the path of jnana or the path of yoga must be totally renounced? It has to do with the demands of the path, actually. See, in the path of bhakti, what do we have to do? We have to lovingly remember Radha Krishna. That can be done whether we're in the jungle, in an ashram, at work, in our car, at home, in New York, in some small town somewhere else. No matter where we are, it can be done. Bhakti can be practiced. Whether someone has a lot of attachment in the world or almost no attachment in the world, either way, they can start thinking of Sri Krishna as their own. Let's say somebody is very attached to their family and they think, you know, this spiritual path is very difficult. I'm supposed to not have any desires? That's what some people think. Actually, on the path of bhakti, you don't, that's not a requirement to start the path. This understanding has to be there that the goal is divine. The goal is not to multiply our material enjoyments. And we also have to understand not to ask God for material things. Bhagwan says, sansar ni mangna hai. But if we understand that, our heart may be filthy and full of all kinds of desires and attachments. We're still qualified to do bhakti. I have so much attachment in my kids, let's say someone says. I can never stop thinking about them. Can I also do bhakti? Why not? Make Shri Krishna another one of your kids. Let's say you have two kids, a son and a daughter, and you're very much attached to both of them. Now you have a second son. Shri Krishna is also your son. Or if you want, you have a second daughter. Radharani is your daughter. If you can really start thinking about them like that, like you just added another member to your family, and the same way that you think of your kids, you think of Radha or you think of Krishna, you just started the path of bhakti. So you don't have to remove attachments before starting bhakti. You just start loving Krishna. That's it. The more you start loving him, the more your attachment will grow in him, and naturally it will reduce in the world. But that happens along the way. It's not a requirement before you even start. On the path of bhakti, we don't try to halt the activity of the mind. We try to divert the activity of the mind. Whereas on the path of jnana and the path of yoga, it has to be halted. Oh, you love your family very much? Either you remove those attachments from your mind or don't come on this path. That's the path of jnana and the path of yoga. You want to follow this path? Leave all those attachments. Don't love anybody or anything. Then you're qualified to follow this path. Only desire liberation. Mumukshutva. Otherwise, this path is not for you. That's not bhakti. Bhakti says your mind is very active all the time. So just turn that activity towards Shri Krishna. Don't remove all of your attachments. That's too difficult. Divert those attachments towards him. Just like I told you, you have a loving nature, you like to have family and friends, so make Shri Krishna the most important member of your family in your heart and love him. So you divert that nature of the mind towards him. That's the advantage of the path of bhakti, and that's why everybody is qualified. But on the path of jnana, we have to be very wary. If we are unqualified and we try to follow that path, then we have no chance. Just like the person who enters a computer engineering course and doesn't even know where the on-off button is on the computer. He has no chance of learning computer programming. Jagadguru Shankaracharya, who's the most famous proponent of this path of jnana, he has said, Adau nitya nitya vastu viveka pariganyate. The first thing you need is viveka. You have to understand the difference between what is nitya and what is anitya. Anitya, this whole world is anitya, it's temporary. And what is nitya? Your soul and God. So what is anitya? Leave it. Don't have any attachment to it. Virag is number two. First, vivek, you understand the difference. Then, virag. If this world is impermanent, then have no attachment in it. Then, shamadhi shatka sampattihi. These are six things rolled into one. Basically, it means not being bothered by any kind of uncomfortable situation, hunger, cold, rain, thirst. Not being disturbed if someone scolds you or insults you. Not having any attachment to your own personal status. Having control over your, not only your senses, that's dumb, but over your mind, shama. Then the fourth qualification, mumukshutva, intense desire for liberation. Then you're qualified to hear the explanation of who is formless God and how can you attach your mind to Him. So the path of jnana is very difficult. The path of yoga is equally difficult to qualify for. It's the same thing. You have to be totally renounced. Even if you qualify, Shri Krishna says, kleshodhikataraha in the Gita. Even if you qualify for the path, then following the path is very difficult and you may stumble and fall again and again because it's hard to maintain that level of renunciation when you have all kinds of sanskars stored up in your mind from uncountable past lifetimes, and at any time you could get hit with a worldly sanskar that wants to divert your mind towards the world, worldly comforts and entertainments. But you can't give in to that. With the force of your will, you have to maintain your renunciation. Only then you can reach the point of entering into samadhi, which is the goal of both jnana and yoga. The reason that here Sri Maharaji is saying the path of yoga is the path of attaining paramatma, it's normally we keep it very simple. It's much more complex than any ordinary person can understand. But just understand this much. Both the jnani and yogi want to get into samadhi, which is a fully absorbed state of mind where you're thoughtless. On the path of jnana, you do that merely by meditating on the divinity of your soul and the oneness of your soul with formless God. On the path of yoga, the yogi may meditate on God's, you can say, cosmic form, His almighty form as the resting place, residing place of the entire universe. We call Paramatma. So he may meditate on God in order to get into samadhi. So it's sometimes done on the path of yoga. That's why we say the yoga is the path to paramatma. But both paths, jnana and yoga, require total renunciation. And on both paths, you may fall. Now, even if you're able to maintain your surrender, the important thing to realize is that in order to be liberated from Maya, you have to surrender to God. But when will God grace? When you surrender to Him. But can Nirakar Brahm grace you? Kya Nirakar Brahm kripa karte hain? Nahi karte. Formless God doesn't do anything because all of His powers are dormant. Nirakar Brahm wouldn't even know who's surrendering to Him or not. He doesn't hear anything, see anything, know anything. He's just a formless divine existence like that, even though it's our same Shri Krishna. So the jnani has to surrender to a personal form of God in order to get free from Maya. If he doesn't, yenyeravindaksha vimuktamanina tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya aruhya krit chrena param padam tata patantya dhona drita yushma dangraya. In the Bhagavatam it said that the jnani could reach to the topmost level of heart purification through his path of jnana by practicing samadhi. He purified his heart, but he didn't get free from maya. His mind or his heart is still mayik. Jab hamara man maya se bana hai, to us mayik man se hum maya ko uttirn kaise karenge? Maya se uttirn kaise ho sakte hain? Your mind is the tool you're using to meditate, and mind itself is mayik, so how will the mayik mind cross over maya? Impossible. So the only recourse is to use that mayik mind to surrender to divine God. So even though the mind should not be able to cross over maya, but with the grace of God, we can. But if we don't surrender to him, then inevitably we fall. So here in the next doha, Sri Maharaj ji has written, Jnani aru yogi lahain nij swarup ko gyan. The jnani and yogi can know their own self. When the heart is fully purified, the jnani or the yogi realize the divinity of their own soul. In their pure sattvic mayic mind, they receive the reflection of their divine soul and they understand, I'm a divine soul. What do we call that? Atmagyan, the knowledge of the self. This is not Brahmagyan. Two separate things, Atmagyan and Brahmagyan. We call one self-realization and we call one God-realization. Both are referred to with the word mukt or liberated, which can be confusing to someone. In Ved, there's a phrase, muktasya vimuchyate. Muktasya, the one who is liberated, vimuchyate, is liberated. He has to be liberated a second time. Why does he have to be liberated twice? Because there's two kinds of maya. There's swarupavarika maya, and there's gunavarika maya. Swarupavarika maya means the ignorance of the mind, where we've forgotten our true self. We identify ourself as the body, and we forget we're actually the soul, and as a consequence, we get attached to all the material things in the world. That maya, the jnani or the yogi, has been liberated from through his practice. But the other maya, which you can call as the original veil of maya, separating the soul from God, it's called gunavarika maya, that can't be crossed by any means, only by surrendering to God. So he's free from one maya, but not the other. So muktasya vimuchyate. The mukt also has to be liberated. Then he truly becomes mukt forever. Otherwise, he's still under maya, and again, maya can really grab hold of him, and he can again forget his identity. He can become attached in the world, having forgotten his true self as the soul. So, you see that the path of jnana and yoga are both fraught with many dangers and difficulties, and even in the end, they don't lead to the ultimate liberation unless the individual surrenders to God. So, Hari Swarupa Jane Nahi Maya Mahi Bhulan. Jnani Nam Api Chetansi Devi Bhagavati Hisa Baladakrishya Mohaya Mahamaya Prayachati. Markandeya Puran says, the jnani can get overcome by maya again. Balat. This maya is so powerful. Akrishya. It just pulls the mind back in. But tadanugraha hetu ke naiva chavigyanena moksha siddhir bhavitumar hati. Shankaracharya says, if you surrender to God, then with His grace, you can know Him, and having known Him, you're also liberated from Maya. You receive moksha. But tadanugraha, anugraha, your grace. It's only possible through your grace. So here Sri Maharaji has explained that on their own, the jnani and yogi can know their own self, but they can't know God without His grace. Brahma bhuta prasannatma nashochati nakangchati samah sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param bhaktya mam abhijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvatah tato mam tatvato gyatva vishate tadanantaram gita. Shri Krishna says, having eliminated all of His desires, in other words, also having crossed Swarupa Varika Maya, the jnani, the yogi, is perfectly peaceful, and yet he still hasn't known me. He's only known his own self. But if he does bhakti to me, then bhaktya abhijanati. Then he gains the full knowledge, because now he knows me. Before he only knew his soul, but his soul is ansh of me, so he had a partial knowledge. Now he knows me through my grace. So, abhijanati, he has the total knowledge, he knows me in full, and having known me, he is liberated from maya, and he merges into me, because that is the goal of the jnani, to merge into formless God. So we see that bhakti is supreme. Both the path of jnana and yoga have the power to purify the heart, but not to liberate one from maya. Going further ahead, Shri Kripaluji Maharaj explains more about Shri Krishna's grace. We'll see that as we chant the Dohas coming up.
Jai Radhe Krishna, Radhe, Radhe, Radhe Krishna, Radhe. 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 Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. Krishna, Jaya Krishna, Jaya Krishna, Jnani Jnani Aru Yogi Lahe Nij Swarup O Jnan Radhe Radhe Hari Swarup Jane Nahi Maya Mahi Bhulan Radhe Radhe Jnani Aru Yogi Jabe Krishna Bhakti Ur An Radhe Radhe Krishna Kripate Hitabe Pave Brahma Gyan Radhe Radhe Tabe Pave Brahma Jnana Radhe Jai Radhe Krishna Radhe 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 Krishna 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 Radhe
So we see there's a big difference between self-realization and actual God-realization. Those of you who have heard speeches and read books about spirituality nowadays, you probably hear this term self-realization used a lot. It's a very popular term. But if you hear someone being touted as self-realized, you can understand immediately that there's no correct knowledge available there. Why would you tout yourself as self-realized? What have you attained? Nothing. Atmagyani ka bhi patan ho jata hai. How do we know we haven't been self-realized uncountable times in the past and just fallen from that state? So being self-realized, sure, it's a great thing, but you're still under Maya. You're still caught in the cycle of birth and death. If a self-realized soul dies, what happens? He's reborn. He still hasn't surrendered to God, so he's still not free from Maya. You have to become God-realized. That is the ultimate attainment. Even after, if someone succeeded in following the path of Gyan or Yoga, fully purified their heart, after hundreds or even thousands of lifetimes of continuous effort, and then having succeeded in fully purifying their heart, they surrender to Shri Krishna, and with His grace, they're liberated. In the next Doha, Sri Maharajji says, Kotina Gyanina Madhya Ko Prema Sudhara Sapai Jimi Sanakadi Shukadi Mana Brajarasa Rahe Dubai. Even after all of that, let's say a jnani who's liberated from Maya with the grace of Shri Krishna after so much effort, and now he's ready to merge into formless Brahm. But maybe it happens before he merges into God. Maybe it happens to be Shri Krishna's avatar time. And he hears the sound of Shri Krishna's flute. What happens? His Brahmanand, his bliss of formless God, is gone forever. Why? Now he's heard the sound of Shri Krishna's flute. He's gotten a taste of the bliss of Sakar Brahm, which exceeds the bliss of formless God. So imagine, he went through that arduous route to reach God. Instead of just doing bhakti, he followed that arduous route. And in the end, he ends up in the same place where the bhakt was all the time. Oh Krishna, I just want to hear the sound of your flute. I surrender to you. Please grace me. Oh Shri Krishna, I just want to see you. We have some examples in our divine history, like Sanakadik, four jnani saints who are also avatar of Bhagwan. So what could be a better example than them? From the time of their birth, they're Brahma's first sons. From the time of their birth, they ever roam our Brahmand with their mind absorbed in formless God. And one time they went to the abode of Sakar Brahm, the almighty form of Shri Krishna, Paramatma, Mahavishnu. Now, Paramatma, Mahavishnu doesn't even do any leelas, but you can at least have his darshan. He doesn't play on his flute, but at least you can still see him. You can hear the sound of his voice. Well, in this case, Tasya Arvinda Nayanasya Padarvinda Kinjalka Mishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Antar Grihe. The sound, not the sound, the fragrance of the Tulsi that was offered at the lotus feet of Mahavishnu, Tulsi flower. It came and entered the nostrils of Sanakadik Paramahans as they entered his divine abode. And Sankchobhamakcharajushamapichittatanvo. their bliss of Brahmanand was gone forever. Why? Because now they had just gotten the fragrance of the tulsi flower that had been offered at the lotus feet of Mahavishnu, and that exceeded the bliss of Brahmanand, the unlimited bliss of formless God. Kamam bhava svavrijineo nirayo. They say, oh my dear Lord, please never let us be without this bliss of your personal form. We're even willing to be born in Narak. Kamam bhava svavrijinair nirayeshuna syat cheto livadya dinute padayoramet vachaschanastulasivadya ditengrishobha puryetate gunaganair yadi karnarandhra. Let our ears always hear the sound of your divine name. Let our voice always chant your gunas. Let our nostrils always take in the glorious fragrance of the tulsi that's been offered to you. In other words, let us keep enjoying the bliss of your personal form, and as long as we have that, we are willing to be born in Narak. These are the words of someone who's actually experienced Brahmanand. Shukadev Ji Paramahans was also a Janmajat Jnani Paramahans, ever absorbed in the bliss of formless God to the point of being in Brahmalin state. He's totally oblivious to everything and everyone around him in the material world. He only sees and knows formless God and the bliss of formless God. This world doesn't even exist for him. And when he heard a shloka of the Bhagavatam chanted that described the beauty of Shri Krishna, and another shloka chanted that described one guna of Shri Krishna, his kindness, he also abandoned that state of being absorbed in Brahmanand and desired to hear the whole Bhagavatam, which is full of such descriptions and full of the bliss of Bhagwan Shri Krishna. So here Sri Maharaji refers to these examples, saying that Sanakadik, Shukadik, their mind, Braj ras rahe Dubai. Their mind just stays absorbed in this nectar of Shri Krishna's divine bliss that we call Braj ras. Just remains drowned in that all the time. So then imagine the greatness of this bliss of Shri Krishna, and then why go and follow such a long path to get to Brahmanand? Why not go directly to Shri Krishna? Maharaji is actually quoting directly from another shloka of Bhagavatam here. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana sudurlabha prashantatma kotishvapi mahamune. Here Maharaji says, kotina jnanina madhyako kotishvapi mahamune. Out of hundreds of millions of realized jnanis, liberated jnanis, who have realized the bliss of formless God, out of them, hardly ever, rarely, it may happen that they may get the bliss of Premanand, this bliss I described of the personal form of God, the divine love of God. So it's such a rare thing. But when they do get it, they never go back. So says the Bhagavatam, and so describes Jagadguru Shri Kripaluji Maharaj here. On the path of yoga, sometimes the yogi may get siddhis, powers of yoga. But these siddhis have nothing to do with the bliss of God. Premanand is the topmost siddhi. See, you have siddhis of the material world, you have siddhis of the divine world. The topmost siddhi is Premanand. One time, a bhakt saint and a yogi, they were walking and they needed to cross a river. So, the bhakt, God-realized saint, he's always absorbed in the bliss of God. He sees, oh, there's a boat here and a ferry boat man. He inquired, how much do you charge to take me across to the other side of the river? He said, 2 rupees. So he gave him his 2 rupees and he went across. The yogi said, I'm not paying some ferry boat man. He used his yogic siddhis. He was a very advanced yogi. So an advanced yogi can defy gravity. He can levitate or even fly up in the air if he wants to. So he just walked across the water. And he got to the other side and proudly looked at the bhakt. So the bhakt says, you know, these siddhis that you're so proud of, what are they worth? 2 rupees. You worked so hard, renouncing the world, practicing this arduous path of yoga, and it's worth 2 rupees. And the more you use it, the more your powers decline, because these powers are not actually meant for use and showing off and enjoying. They're merely landmarks of your progress on the path of yoga. But they're also mayic markers. They're just powers that lie dormant in your mind. They've been awakened because you've progressed to a certain stage, but they're mayic powers. So if you use them, you're actually getting attached in the world, and that causes your power to reduce. So you did all of that effort to get this siddhi, and by using it, you lost some of your power. And what is its worth anyway? It's only worth 2 rupees. So even though the path of yoga is a great path, I'm not belittling it. It's a great path which is described in our scriptures. You can say it's a more physical approach to God, but in the end you have to surrender to God anyway. And in the very end, after it's all said and done, the topmost thing is just to attain the divine vision and divine love of Sri Krishna. This state of liberation and being absorbed in Brahmanand is a far inferior divine attainment to the bliss of the personal form of God. And at that point, yogic siddhis have no meaning. Whether someone is absorbed in the bliss of Premanand or they're absorbed in the bliss of formless God, for either person, siddhis have no meaning, because these are only material powers which are meant to be transcended. Samadha vupasarga vyutthane siddhayah. Yoga Darshan. Sage Patanjali says that these siddhis which come by practicing yoga are merely obstacles. Upasarga. Obstacles on the path. For a yogi, they have to be transcended, and eventually he has to surrender to God. Ishvara pranidhanat samadhi siddhir ishvara pranidhanat. Sage Patanjali says, to perfect his samadhi, the yogi has to surrender to the Ishwar, the personal form of God. So we see that all of these paths are valid paths. Shri Kripaluji Maharaj gives full respect to all the paths, but he explains the limitations of the various paths, and that they're all in fact dependent on the path of bhakti, and the path of bhakti is the only one which is relevant to the souls of Kaliyug. because that's the only path which we can qualify for and actually follow in this age of materialism. In the next Doha that we'll see tomorrow, the question of if all we require is the grace of God, then why doesn't God just grace us right now? This question has to be answered. Is there some price for God's grace? Then he would not be called Akaran Karun. But if he is Akaran Karun, then he should be gracing us right now with no delay. So how do we resolve this apparent contradiction? We'll see tomorrow. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.